are degenerates. So
let's do it, brother.
You know, the fact that you're also a Bitcoiner is going to be a lot of fun to have in this conversation, man, because I think that's one of those things where a lot of people, you know, that are part of this, you know, we have people from everywhere come in. And so, you know, there are some who are not Bitcoiners at all. Like they've heard of it. Yeah, they've absolutely never done anything with it. So, yeah, if that's the case, then now that we actually have Bitcoiners on here that are doing some amazing stuff, like I think I first found out about you, I don't know, it was probably when you were releasing traffic. And man, I watched that and I was like, geez, man, I need to like put away time to go do this. It's like, this is tough. Like this is a rough watch.
Oh man, it's it gets worse, brother. You know,
yeah, that's a cleaned up version of what's really happening.
That's another one of the things, Ryan, that I'm really glad that you're doing the spaces stuff, is because like I got turned on to your projects because of conversations going on in spaces. Like there was probably the better part of 2023. I was really in the peak of my spaces addiction, to where a conversation kept coming back to the trafficking conversation between like both adults, and then the children would get wrapped up. And Tara Rhodes was a big one that would come up and talk in spaces about everything that they were seeing, like the ridiculousness of how U.S. Marshals were being tasked towards chasing down J6ers versus actually doing their job. Like a lot of these conversations kind of meshed in together with these separate other conversations, and everybody kept pointing back to like, you guys got to go check out what is treason, trafficked, and like soon to be invaded, which is obviously now out. But like, I watched the first time I watched your trafficked documentary, I was actually at work. And then I had to come back and like rewatch it again here at home. It's like, I don't think anybody that's going to be listening tonight can really fathom. Cause like you guys are saying, the documentary is dark, but think about what couldn't have been put into the documentary so that you guys could actually get the message out there. Like it's a dark topic. Like, I laugh, but like, I laugh at the ridiculousness of how deep everything goes.
Oh, how complicit. We're live right now? Just want to check.
Yeah, we're live.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. When we first started talking, I saw that it was live up there in the corner, but I wasn't sure because you guys didn't say anything about us actually being live. So I was like, okay, I don't know if we're... I didn't want to start putting out all the good stuff until we got this party started. But the, you know, the darkness behind this, and the darkest part is the fact that our government's so complicit in it, right? Yeah. This operation that is a child trafficking operation, it's being ran like a full-scale military operation. In order to do that, you have to have compromised government officials at every single level. It's hard to fathom how hard it would be to get one child, let alone two or three, out of a country, let alone 40, right? Even Laura Silsby in the Clinton Foundation in Haiti back in 2000, gosh, when was that? Like 2016 or 14, when she got busted with taking 40 kids out of Haiti. Twice she got caught. With all of the power of the Clintons and all of the power of the deep state and everybody backing her, she couldn't get 40 kids out of a country that had almost no laws, no court system. I mean, it was their civilization was collapsing in Haiti. So you take that, and then you take a look at what our government has done and how magically 452,121 migrant children, these are children ages 0 to 17 that have been trafficked into America from 180 different nations. These children have been trafficked across these countries, across not just one border, multiple borders, 3, 4, 5 borders just to get to Mexico before they're trafficked into America. And then they arrive at our border, and the second that they step foot on U.S. property or U.S. soil, they become property of the United States government. And I don't think there's anything that you would want less than your child to be property of the United States government. I mean, they can't even run a DMV, let alone a daycare, let alone a facility that houses thousands and thousands of children. Now, that's what we've seen. We've seen our government turn, not just our government, just key specific people in our government. And then because Congress failed to do their job and there's no oversight because the entire apparatus that we consider our government is so rotted to the core that there's no checks and balances, because you can't check somebody that's going to put you into prison if you check them, right? So it's like we have these politicians that are so corrupt and they've been so blackmailed that they can't even do their job as members of Congress anymore, because if they do their job, then our intelligence communities will basically leak files, photos, evidence, and just completely end their careers, end their and their life really is not taking their, like, physically take their life, but, you know, the humiliation and shame that it would bring to their families if they actually knew, or the world knew, what they were doing behind closed doors, it would devastate them. And that's why this, I don't know, this operation still continues to this day, because it's pedophilia that is literally the linchpin that ties all of this blackmail operation together. And I don't want to say it started with Epstein, but Epstein literally perfected it. Epstein was caught sexually abusing a 14-year-old girl, and because of his connections, basically walked scot-free. In order to do that, it's like, you know, I don't think Epstein just was the luckiest man and just happened to end up in a courtroom with a judge that happened to be, you know, in favor of towards pedophiles, right? Like,
yeah, that's a dead man switch.
Yeah. There were strings that were pulled and connections that were made and doors that were opened and closed that allowed that man to walk free. And just imagine being the girl or the family or the anybody that had the courage to actually stand up to a man that powerful and that evil. And then just to watch him walk out of prison. Imagine being the parents of the little girl that was raped. How much money did they have to pay that girl to stay silent? And to, I mean, the media, everybody that would be complicit in an operation at that scale, it's hard to really wrap your head around. And that's where they absolutely perfected, you know, blackmailing these politicians. And they really had, you know, taken full control over our complete government at that point.
I want to get into all of this. I've got so many questions for you, Ryan. Like, you know, having done this, I think, you know, this is one of those shows where I get to nerd out a little bit, especially going back in history and how this all relates to, you know, where we find ourselves now. Like, who laid the tracks in the first place? You know, how was this done? And, you know, who's behind it? And is there progress being made? But I'm going to hit the intro here in a second. Ladies and gents, we have Ryan Motto with us tonight. And I got to tell you, I'm going to warn you first and foremost, we're probably going to get into some pretty heavy and dark stuff. So if you do have kids, man, maybe this is that show where you know, use your judgment. You know, this may be something that you don't want to expose them to yet. I'm not saying don't have those conversations with your kids, but definitely, you know, maybe think twice about having them stick around through this show. But this is going to be one hell of a broadcast. We've got so much to cover. Ryan's also a Bitcoiner on top of this, so I am really amped to get his take on where we're going and how this darkness is going to be driven out of our lives because of, you know, certain technologies and everything that's out there. But hold on to your seats. Bitcoin Veterans has got a hell of a show for you. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, if you haven't left the room, leave the room. This is Bitcoin Veterans. This is self-explanatory. We're Bitcoiners. We're veterans. We are all about liberty and freedom. We did this because we knew there were guys out there that loved America, that loved the ideas of freedom, property, the right to keep and bear arms, to speak your mind, to redress your government, and do everything that those badasses did back in 1776. That before the military got their hands on you, and the, you know, Department of Education put about 13 plus years into you in terms of indoctrination and told you exactly how star spangly awesome the United States was, and then perverted it and sent you overseas to do some really terrible shit. We have found the white pill. This is our passion. This is, you know, what we love. We love our fellow human beings. We love America. We love this nation. We don't have to love the government, and this, you know, revolution in terms of money, in terms of freedom tech that's out there, this is what's going to propel humankind into a Kardashev 1 type of species. And so when when we have amazing guests like our guest tonight, Ryan Mata, I am just more stoked than ever to see not only is it working, but people are actually taking action out there and doing some amazing things. And I hope this is one of those shows where we can get Ryan's message out, especially to the Bitcoin universe out here, to help him along his way to do more amazing things. So if you don't know who Ryan Mata is, you may need to go check your pulse. There is some amazing things that he's done. He is a filmmaker. He's done investigative journalism, and I would say some of the best in the world at this point. He broke the story on You Said long before President Trump or any of these guys started doing anything with his show, with his documentary Trafficked. Go out there and check out Amber Alert and This Is Treason as well. Ryan, your work speaks for itself, my man, and we are honored to have you here tonight.
Man, God bless you, gentlemen. It's an honor to be here. I just was just sharing this stream out everywhere I could. So for your audiences watching, make sure you guys smash that like button for these guys and share this stream out there and push this out, because we're going to get into some good stuff in this show.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really good. And I wanted to kind of start off. I like, my brain thinks chronologically a lot of times, and a while back, a long time ago, probably closer to 2018, I think is when William Barr became the AG of the Trump administration the first time around. And when he came in, I was like, oh, this guy's not good. He's related to George Bush Sr. And if you know anything about George Bush Sr., JFK, the Golden Triangle down in the the Southwest Pacific, you understand a lot more about kind of where we're going and what's happening. For those of you guys that don't know, maybe some cliff notes. George Bush Sr. Was an operative within the CIA. He worked hand in hand with William Barr back in the day. William Barr was an attorney. That's all he ever wanted to do, is be an attorney and work for the CIA. And we can get into where he's from, but I think everybody knows, or should say what he is, but I think everybody knows. And Ryan, you can tell us whether you want to go down the Israeli rabbit hole at the same time or stay away from it. But
I never shy away, my friend. We can dive right down that rabbit hole if you'd like.
Yeah. So these guys, those two guys have been in cahoots for a long time. And obviously, if you know the Dulleses and Bush's role within the JFK assassination, you start to put together some pieces of where the CIA may have started doing human trafficking, drug trade, and all the things that it, you know, incorporates and brings here to America and trades for things like, you know, Iran-Contra overseas in terms of drugs and guns and, you know, color revolutions and everything else. But I can't help but start to draw these parallels from the beginning of our conversation, Ryan, into what that has now become after, you know, I guess 45, 50 years plus of having all the money they can print since we went off the gold standard.
I think all of our problems start with money, right? I think every single issue that we're dealing with today revolves around their ability to print money on demand out of thin air and devalue the wealth of our entire nation. I think that this child trafficking issue crisis doesn't exist without money, without their ability to abuse that money printer. The amount of money that would need to be used to carry out and build out this operation at this scale, it's so monumental that I don't know if we're ever going to actually understand how much money our government has stolen from us over the last 4 years. I would love to know an even remotely close to the actual figure of what it actually is. We're starting to see it a little bit over there with what Trump's exposing. He just did a something about like maybe like an hour ago where he was reading off all of the fraud they've uncovered already.
Yeah.
And in order to carry out these operations, right, like we're talking about offshore bank accounts, high-level government officials over, you know, generations and generations. I mean, if we really want to dial it back, it goes all the way back to Hoover and the creation of the FBI, back when it was the Federal Bureau, right? Before it became the FBI, it was just the FB back in the day in like the 09 till the 20s or something like that, or the 15s when he finally got the approval to turn it into like the FBI. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it was Hoover went and created what was called, like, I believe it was the Blue Oyster was the club that he built. And in this club, he literally rigged every room with surveillance cameras, microphones, all the advanced technology that it had at his fingertips. And he would throw basically gay orgies where he would have celebrities, politicians, drugs, all of it, all for everybody to partake in. And he was there just documenting it the whole time. And while at the same time, because he was gay, and back then that was what they used to blackmail you, right? If you were gay back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, even probably into the 60s, that was enough to end your political career if it was exposed, let alone, you know, just you being gay was enough, but let alone having them having photos or evidence of it and putting that out for the world to see. I mean, that would, the shame that that would bring upon your family would be enough to just end your career. It'd be enough to, you would never be able to show your face in public again. It would be international news. So he figured that out early on. And that was how he, you know, carried out these black, they say that Hoover had like the largest black book in history. I mean, he stayed the director of the FBI for 50 years through how many administrations. There was countless presidents over the years that hated him. That's how I believe it was Truman who created the CIA, because he was so angry that this man, Hoover, had basically more power than him, that the CIA was created to, so that he could have a branch of government that was equally as powerful, I think, at one point, to try to take on the FBI. And no matter what president took office, somehow this man managed to stay in power. So that's where this blackmail operation really, I mean, our government is rooted in blackmail. And it always has to do with the money, right? The blackmail operations can't be carried out. The covert operations can't be carried out. Every single operation that, you know, none of us would ever vote for, that they could never in a million years get funding for if they had to do something like, I don't know, create war bonds like they did prior to 1913 and actually put a message out to the public and try to be honest about it and try to convince us to take our money, our shillings, if you will, and give them our hard-earned money. Nobody would ever do it. Like, imagine Ukraine. Just think about that, right? If Joe Biden was like, okay, we need $250 billion. So next month, America, you're not getting a paycheck. We're going to take 100% of your paycheck for the next four pay periods. And then after that, we're going to tax you another 50% of every paycheck after that, right? There would have been a revolution in the streets before tomorrow morning. So yeah, I think money is the root of all of this evil. And until we get that, truly get control of that money printer, which, man, if they audit the Federal Reserve, boy, oh boy, it could get really interesting, to say the least.
Do you actually think that they're going to let that happen? I personally don't think that the Federal Reserve is going to commit to an actual audit. Like, I don't see that actually happening.
Well, just seeing how gold is getting shipped from all over the world. I mean, they just drained the reserves in Argentina. I forget where the other country was. There's been two countries for sure.
That Bank of England's been siphoned aggressively.
Recently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it seems like they're trying to somehow acquire a massive amount of gold in a very short period of time. And what are they doing with that gold? I don't know. But a full audit of the Federal Reserve seems pretty crazy, because I don't think any of us actually believe that there's 1 ounce of gold in that vault. I think there's more evidence that has came out in the last couple of weeks that really points to the fact that, you know, it was in the 70s or somewhere when they basically looted that treasury, or looted Fort Knox. And I don't know who did it or how it happened.
France was demanding that their trade be settled in gold. They sent their battle cruiser over. They're like, you're going to fill it up now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. You know, I would have, I mean, just weeks ago, I would have said they would have never been able to go after USAID. Very powerful organizations there, and the fact that they've gone in there, they're starting to audit them. You know, this actually might have some real legs. And, you know, the idea that, you know, I guess Knox maybe does have gold in it. It'll be also interesting to see if possibly they have a lot more gold than we think that they have. And one of the reasons why they, you know, and a lot of people, I just, you know, like to play devil's advocate on this a little bit, because when we went over to Iraq in 2003 and discovered a whole bunch of gold, I guarantee you that gold made its way back to somewhere, right? Like, it didn't stay in Iraq for very long. That stuff was transported and moved. And I imagine a lot of it is probably sitting within, you know, the hands of, you know, somebody, or I should say maybe the Federal Reserve type of banks or something that's out there. But I don't think it's just, for the life of me, I don't think it's empty. It could be. I have
I agree with you, Shane, because like there's also the stuff that Colonel Towner Watkins and I have dug up, like reading that book by Greg Poolgrain, The Incubus of Intervention, where he detailed the Dulles' operations through the CIA to smuggle out a couple hundred tons worth of gold just out of Indonesia. And they've done it to Chile. They've done it to like 30 other countries. So like there's like we could have thousands of tons of undocumented gold in our possession. But that gold could have also made it to the black market to fund all sorts, like, for example, all the child trafficking stuff that we're talking about here. So, like, we don't know if we actually have it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly happy with my Bitcoin either way that this plays out. So I don't know about you guys, but
yeah,
I'm stacked up. I'm ready for the ride, whatever way we go. I can't wait to get there.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, as gold being a pre-indicator of what's going to happen to Bitcoin, I like the moves that it's making right now. So, let's fast forward to like what's going on now though. Traffic was what released back in October, November of last year.
September.
September.
This Invaded launched in October.
Okay. Yeah. Now, these two kind of go hand in hand. If you guys haven't watched them out there, I highly recommend, you know, take a few hours of your time and go out there and get into Trafficked and Invaded, because these are things that...
Hey, babe, I put a...
Until you see
put it... a towel to wipe off paws up by the front door.
Oh, you muted yourself, Shane. There you go.
Here we go. Anyway, so when I started seeing this, you know, like, I think I've known for a long time, Ryan, that this is one of the worst. I mean, it's a government of criminals, right? Like, and not just kind of criminals, the worst criminals, you know. And I think what they do is, you know, when they say that any product is free, that, you know, anytime a service is free, you're the product. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you think and start looking out onto the landscape, porn everywhere is free, right? It's just as abundant and as free as it could possibly be, which means you're the product. Your metadata is what's being harvested. And so when you get some narcissist that runs for government that has all sorts of weird fetishes that they already, you know, have documented that they, you know, can pay for, now they know exactly who they want in these offices, right? They're like, dude, that guy, we can lean on him this way, that way, and, you know, seven ways from Sunday. When we start to understand that that's who they put into office, and they say, hey, look, we'll make you rich and powerful and popular, and all you got to do is do what we tell you to do, and at the end of the day, nobody will be able to touch you because we own the executive, we own the judicial, and we own Congress. So if you want to play ball, great. If not, take it as far as you want, but I guarantee you that's not a good idea. You know, that's how people commit suicide, with two, you know, bullets to the back of the brain. Yeah. So I think we understand, you know, how easy it is for these guys to do what they want to do, given the money and the sophistication of the perversion that is here in the United States. You've said many times in your documentaries that the U.S. is the number one country in terms of consumption of pedophilia porn. Right. Like that is a staggering statistic. When this all came to your attention, you know, I'd like to kind of get the backstory on, like, what was the straw that broke the camel's back that said, man, I'm going to do something about this. I want to get into this. I have to start looking into this and using my skills to tell the story.
Oh, man, that's a great question. It's a long story if you got time.
Yeah.
Hit it.
So, you know, I want to touch on one thing first. You said the number one consumer of child porn. We're also the number one consumer of child rape, and we're also the number one consumer of all hard narcotics, right? We are also probably the number one country with the most obese citizens per capita, the most incarcerated citizens per capita. I mean, we are the top of everything that you don't want to be the top at, and we're not there when it comes to literacy, childhood education, anything that should be important, child fitness. I mean, there's so much more, you know, as far as a country where our debt is what the average American has, you know, $10,000 in credit card debt or $11,000 paying, you know, the average APR in those credit cards is 21.2% or something crazy like that. So, I mean, America's in a really bad position. But my story starts with me being a Bitcoiner, right? And I had my podcast going. I was actually a shitcoiner back then, and then you know, recently became Bitcoin maximalist. You know, got to take some licks along the way and learn the hard way. You know how
we've
it
all
is
been out there, man.
You know,
climbing Mount Stupid is what we call it.
Yeah, climbing Mount Stupid. I climbed that thing twice, dude. Legit, I did. So being in the crypto world, in the Bitcoin space, and I started to when I'm really good at algorithms, right? I don't like working super hard if I don't have to. I love working. I love hard work. But if I'm going to do work and I'm going to record videos for 4 hours and edit for 2 hours, and I'm going to put out that video, I should try to get the most views on it as humanly possible, right? So I'm doing, so I'm reaching more people and I can help more people with the content that I'm putting out. It's always my motto. So I really like studying algorithms and understanding how algorithms work. And when YouTube Shorts rolled out, anytime a platform rolls out a new feature, you're highly incentivized to take advantage of it, especially when there was talk of the TikTok ban and YouTube was trying to kind of trying to take over the vertical video feed. You know, when you put out a vertical video, they were really trying to amplify that. And Shorts are all about your just goldfish attention span, right? Like everybody's got a TikTok brain now, like their brains are just mush and it's just like dopamine hit, dopamine hit, dopamine hit. So if you learn how to edit your Shorts really well, and I trigger a first dopamine hit within 6 seconds, I can keep you to about 23 to 27 seconds. And then I got to trigger another one there. And if I can hit it there again, I can keep you all the way till pretty much a 45 second mark. And then what I was doing is I was cutting the end of the video and I was putting it in the front of the video. So it's a short, right? So there's transitions and people don't realize it. So when the video ends and it loops, he's finishing the sentence. And that first 6 seconds is his actual ending of the video. But you don't realize you're watching it until you get about 1.5 times through it, right? So I learned how to basically kind of edit my Shorts and break the algorithm. And I went from doing, you know, like a normal Bitcoin podcast, I was doing a couple hundred thousand, you know, maybe a million. I don't even think I ever did a million views a month, to doing 30 million views a month across 3 channels, right? So and then at the time I started to dabble a little bit into putting out some Trump and some Tucker, the FTX stuff was happening right then and there. So I started to go a little bit into the Tucker stuff. And that's when I really like Tucker and FTX really kind of caught my attention. And I go, okay, I'm going to try to do this with some Trump Shorts because everybody was hating on Trump. And I started putting out some Trump Shorts. And I put out a short of Andrew Tate and Bitcoin. Andrew Tate saying that Bitcoin was a better investment than a house. And I had just broken 100,000 subscribers. And my son was so excited to get that 100K plaque from YouTube. Like he was more excited about it than I was, right? And you know, it's kind of like you're a YouTuber. Everybody kind of works towards that 100K plaque. And my son was so excited to show his friends at school that plaque. And my channel gets, they first deny me at the plaque because I put out hateful and dangerous content because I put out a Bitcoin Andrew Tate video or Andrew Tate short. And then they came and they demonetized my channel for putting out a short that of Andrew Tate that says Bitcoin was a better investment than a house. So I'd worked, you know, 3-4 years to build this YouTube channel and I just lost 100% of my income. And just by the grace of God, like the timing of everything was so bizarre. I was kind of getting Twitter spaces were kind of getting up and big at the time. I think Mario Nafal was the first one to kind of have like a decent size. And then me and this other girl that I want to say her name, because she's a serial scammer, but me and her were doing these Twitter spaces together. So we were starting to get big in the Twitter space game as well. And that led me to making contact with a girl named Heather Mullins. And then she introduced me. She's like, oh, you should come and film at CPAC. I can probably get you a job working for the weekend if you want a free ticket and they'll pay you for your hotel room. They'll pay you to film. And I was like, oh, I always want to go. I've never been to CPAC. And she's like, oh, it's a political event. You got to go. I was like, okay, cool. I'll go. And reached out to this guy at LFA TV named Jeremy Harrell. He's the CEO of LFA TV. And he had hired me to do independent videography just at the event. And I was also filming a music video for 4G Auto at the time down at CPAC as well. So I kind of worked out great. I got this little gig. I got paid to go there. I didn't have to pay for my hotel room, my ticket. It was all paid for. Made some money. I was filming the music video for free because it was for the January Sixers on Ashley Babbitt. The song's called The People's Reverend. I'm pretty sure it's taken off of YouTube right now, but it might be up on another platform somewhere. But yeah, so by the grace of God, one of the girls called off at LFA TV that day. So they needed somebody to fill the 4 p.m. slot. I filled the 4 p.m. slot both days. And then the last day, which was Sunday, Trump was speaking at 6:45. And that's when he started speaking at 6, but it's pretty much wrapping up by 6:45. And I get a text message. My phone starts blowing up and it's all my subscribers on YouTube telling me that I canceled their memberships and they wanted to know why. And I was like, what do you mean? I didn't cancel it. So I open my email and I see that my channel has been demonetized. So I instantly start deleting videos, right? And I'm like, okay. No, at first I saw the strikes before I seen the demonetization. So I seen the strikes coming in. So I'm like, oh shit, they're striking multiple videos. I don't want to get struck out because that's what they do to you. They'll strike 3 or 4 videos at a time. So I just went through and started deleting old live streams, right? My channel gets demonetized. At 7:03, I walk out of the door and Jeremy's outside the door. And he's like, hey man, I'd like to offer you a job. I'd like to offer you the 4 p.m. slot. The girl that didn't show up really pissed me off. So she's not going to be worth it. What's this anymore? Are you interested in taking the job? And I was just like, well, I just lost all my income. So pretty dumb to turn down some income, right? And I didn't even think I even talked about what the price was. I was just like, oh, if you're going to pay me to be on your network, yeah, I can do that. So yeah, that's how it started. And that's how I got into the political game. That was in right after the FTX collapse. I think that was in 2022. And the whistleblower named Carlos Arellano, came on my buddy, he came into a Twitter space actually that we were hosting. And he talked to Kyle Serafin, who's the FBI whistleblower, who I was happy to be producing his podcast at the time. By the time I started on LFA TV, I was also producing Kyle's show as well. And we brought on Carlos on Kyle's show, interviewed him for an hour. And I was just like, man, Kyle had there are so many times I'm producing the show in the background. I wanted to ask questions, but like Kyle didn't ask him. So I was like, okay, I'm going to bring Carlos on my show, brought him on my show. And I spent 3 hours with him on my show. And you know, I'm hearing this guy tell me that that our government's running the world's largest child trafficking network. And for 3 hours, I was just question after question because the story sounds so bizarre and so crazy. And he did it for 8 years. So, I mean, this guy had just had story after story after story. And he could compare what it was like when he was moving these children under the Trump administration, where it wasn't a streamlined process of absolute child trafficking. It was actually a reunification process where they actually reunited children with their parents. But if they came over without a parent, both parents dead from a third world country, they have no siblings or brothers or anything, like, you know, our government just can't ship them off to nowhere, right? We kind of put them into these facilities till we try to figure out, is there a safe place for them to go back to in their country? Do they actually have orphanages? Do they have space for these children? And then we go into these child migrant facilities, these detention facilities, if you will. They're almost like child prison camps, except for they're kind of weird how they're structured because they have Game Boys and PlayStations and, you know, and movies and Netflix and computers and gyms and stuff like that. Sounds like it's not a bad gig until you realize that they're getting raped in these facilities by the employees that work there, right? So I'm not trying to paint it like it's an actually good thing because these places are horrific, but some of them are fairly nice inside and whatever. So he tells me this story that there's thousands of children in these facilities in Texas. There's one facility specifically that there's like 1,200 children and boys between the ages of 13 and 17 inside of an old Walmart that has been converted into a child migrant detention facility. Then he starts telling me all these stories about them, telling me about stories about how there was children in there that would come up to him and be like, Carlos, can I use your phone? Carlos like, what do you need to use my phone? You guys got a phone in here. He's like, no, Carlos, I need to use your phone. They won't let me call my mom. He's like, well, why won't they let you call your mom? Well, Carlos, because, you know, Johnny, you know, this kid's 12 or 13. He's like, well, Johnny, you know, I got in a fight with my mom and I went over to Johnny's house and Johnny told me that, you know, we can go to America and we can get PlayStations. And he showed me this video on TikTok that we were getting all this stuff. And, you know, I was just mad at my mom and she's going to be so mad at me, Carlos. I didn't tell her I was coming here. I just want to go home. And these children are being told under no circumstances are they able to call their parents back home. They're under no circumstances are they going home. So he's telling me these stories and I'm just like, you know, you're scratching your head. Like, there's no way. And then at the end of it, after 3 hours, he's like, listen, man, you look at me that look like everybody else gives me. And I told everybody this, but nobody's taking me up on it. But if you're interested, you can come down here and I could take you to these facilities. I'm like, wait, what do you mean? You can take me to a facility where there's kidnapped migrant children in it right now. We can go in there and see the children. So, no, we can't go in there. We can't even make it onto the property, but we can make it to the edge of the property. But then security is going to come out and basically stop us. But, you know, I could show you, you know, and show you the buildings. And I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, I could get down there with my drone and I can get an interview with this kid out in front of this facility. And there's kidnapped migrant children and we can see the children. He's like, well, we have to get there at certain times because they only move the children in the morning, right? Because it's an enclosed facility. And at certain times of the day, you can actually see the children moving around. So it's good enough for me. Let's do this. And I called my boss at LFA TV and I was like, hey, I'm super new to journalism, right? I'm not a journalist. I'm just a Bitcoin bro. I don't even know what I'm doing. And I'm like, hey, man, I think I got this story. And he's like, story where? And I was like, oh, it's down in Texas. These children are being kidnapped and our government's trafficked them. He's like, are you sure? And I'm like, well, listen, I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty sure. But like, how about this? If I don't come back with a story, I'll pay for the trip myself. If I do, we'll break it on LFA TV. He's like, nah, you don't have to do that. Just, you know, how much is it? And I was like, oh, it's probably $500. It was really like 1500. Cause I was only supposed to go for a day, but then I was like, it just sounded too good. I was like, I'm going to go for 4 days. Screw it. flew down there. And then within 15 minutes of getting picked up from the airport, or I didn't get picked up from the airport. I got a rental car, but within 15 minutes of leaving that airport, I was able to drive to five of these facilities, five of them. One.
And I don't mean to interrupt you, Ryan, but that's also like by design that they are that close to the airports. 100%. So they can get like, it's all part of the logistic efficiency and everything.
100%, right? In 5 minutes, 15 minutes of that airport, there's a Brownsville Walmart that holds boys ages 13 to 17, holds 1,200 with over capacity. Carlos said that there's times that he thought there was 2,000 boys in there. The next facility holds girls between the ages of 0 and 12. That facility holds 600. The next one was girls ages 13 to 17. That one held 400. The next one was boys ages 0 to 12. That one held, or 0 to 13 or 0 to 12. That one held 200. And the next one was the weird ones, which are always the smaller ones for some reason, hold mixed boys and girls ages 13 to 14, or sorry, ages 13 to 17. And it's really bizarre that you're putting most likely hypersexualized children that have been sexually assaulted and raped on their way over here. They've been abused and beaten and neglected by every adult in their life. And you're putting these hypersexualized children inside of a facility and you're mixing boys and girls that are just starting puberty. Like what could go wrong? It's like you're literally almost like putting together an environment where you're just breeding, you know, just children, if you will. I mean, it's
literally that's exactly what they've got to be doing.
You wouldn't have to force them to make child porn. You would just have to put hidden cameras in the only areas in that facility where the kids think they're not being filmed at and they're actually off camera, and kids will just be kids. Yeah. And then there you have your never ending supply of child porn. I mean, I could, and then I went, so that's just,
so, what, so
I
found, what year is this, Ryan? Like
this would have been 22. This would have been, I think we did the interviews at the end of 22 and I ended up getting down to Texas in the beginning of 2023.
So this is relatively recent. I mean, this is the last administration and,
oh yeah,
man, holy cow. That the amount of work that you've done in that time is astounding. Mike, I'll ask questions all night.
I will interrupt if I have anything that I want to ask.
One of the stories that that really caught my eye was traffic. In terms of Guatemala and how, you know, complex the situation is, where the United States is literally put into NGOs through USAID. We put together an entire political party down there that wasn't doing worth a shit, came out of, you know, last place with like somewhere around 8% of, you know, the people who were in Guatemala interested in the party. They win the election. This guy is installed by basically our CIA. And then when things start getting really interesting down there, the United States State Department, the U.S. Embassy and a couple of others step in to run cover and make sure that this child smuggling operation, that's smuggling, help me with the crazy numbers, that
190,052.
Yeah, I mean, that is 198,000 out of one country alone,
with a population size of 15 million. So 190,052 children out of a country with a population size of 15 million, child population size, 7 million. So that's 3% of their child population. But go ahead.
So you were boots on the ground down there. I mean, tell us about that experience. And, you know, I'm going to preface this. Please don't give away any trade secrets that would, you know, compromise future trips and things like that. So,
oh no, you're good. You're good. I get picked up from the Attorney General's office. I get a military escort, but an escort from the Attorney General's office, an armed guard that escorts me off the basically from the time I get off that plane to what I want to consider a safe house. And then I'm in this place that I cannot leave, or I don't leave, without an armed guard that takes me from point A to point B. Everywhere I go, I'm transported by somebody from the Attorney General's office that's armed and has the ability to somewhat keep me safe, if you will. I mean, it's, okay, you know, if you get ambushed or whatever, you get ambushed, but you know, it's dangerous. And for myself anyways, I felt more dangerous in Guatemala than I did pretty much anywhere I've ever been. It's the only place where I felt like it was not safe to leave the facility. Like I felt like that they're not just from, as far as it, like if you were just the average person there, you probably would have been a little bit more safe than I was. But I just felt like when I'm literally declaring war against the illegitimate installed president of a country that literally has every cartel operating in out of his back pocket, right? Like, this man's powerful, he's dangerous, and the people that are under him and installed him that run the country, that are actually the people that are pulling the strings, those are the really dangerous people. So yeah, I felt in Guatemala, it's definitely the most dangerous place. I couldn't wait to get out of there. I actually booked my flight out a day early just to make sure that I was getting out of there while Rubio was still in town, just because I felt like, you know, if they body an American, you know, while Rubio's there, the political nightmare that would come from it. So I ended up booking my flight out a day early to get out of there. And then the same time, the first time I flew in there, and I was only in there for 36 hours. I was in there getting the stories. I mean, I didn't pretty much stop from the time that I landed to the time that I left at like five. I think I was recording at like midnight or 12:30, and I had to get picked up for the airport at 3:30 in the morning, you know? So I just run and gun when I'm in Guatemala, but yeah, I got invited down there. So we kind of skipped ahead. We had released Trafficked in September, released Invaded in November or in October. And those films were with my partner, JJ Carroll, who was my partner just in the What Is Treason series. And those films cost us over $100,000 to make. You got two people traveling. We went to 12 or 13 states. We interviewed 35 people, right? So it's a lot of big production in there. When you're flying in and out of airports and you got two people kind of flying at the same time, a lot of times you're like, okay, well, this flight just happens to be $1,000. But if it's not this one, then you're going to sit at the airport for another 24 hours, right? So it's like you're spending so much more money in the travel, you know, getting a little bit bigger of an Airbnb, or you're getting a bigger, you know, whatever. It's always more money with two people plus two people eating and everything that goes along with it. So when we released those, we had to put them behind a paywall because I financed like $67,000 out of my own pocket to fund those. And then we started a Gibson Go as well that helped bring in, you know, the rest of the money that we needed to continuously finance that project. But it didn't move the needle, right? I thought it was probably one of my best documentaries that I've made so far. And because of the paywall, people weren't talking about it, right? I thought we were going to have a couple month runway on it. The way that we structured it was like, okay, we're going to release What Is Treason hashtag Trafficked. That's going to be a huge boom. Then we're going to release What Is Treason hashtag Invaded. So that way, like, people would bring JJ, who's really good. If there's anybody that's like the absolute best marketer in the world, it's JJ. When he believes in something, man, that dude can sell, you know, snow to an Eskimo, man. He's so good at what he does, man. And he's such a great partner. I got nothing but the greatest things to say about that, man. But it didn't move the needle, right? And JJ doesn't work for free. He's got a family. He's got kids. He has to, right? He doesn't have the opportunity. He didn't, you know, stack a bunch of Bitcoin early on and have this, you know, just at least a little bit of a nest egg to kind of keep my head above water if things go really south that I have been blessed with. So I said, okay, screw it. And I just felt like this calling from God the whole time, the way that every door opened, the way that everything fell into place. I had already been working on the the child trafficking stuff for like 2 years when I met JJ. And we weren't even planning to do that documentary, right? Hashtag Trafficked literally came, the idea came out in August when I had finally got back with all of the filming. We went to every location that we needed to get. We got all of the intel that we needed for this documentary. And I knew that JJ, I told him that I didn't want to do the child trafficking one first because I knew once we start down that rabbit hole, it's such a big story. You can't pack it into, because he wanted to pack it into the Invaded documentary. And so after we weren't even going to interview Carlos in the beginning, because I knew once we interviewed Carlos, you have to interview all the other whistleblowers, because, you know, I knew the story, but JJ didn't. So I knew once he heard Carlos that you kind of have to hear Tara, you have to hear Deb, you have to hear Aaron, you have to have it all. And then when you piece it together, it kind of tells this story. So because JJ had already lined up Baz, who's the guy who goes and kicks in the door and actually rescues the children, then we got Carlos. I made a phone call and I was able to get the other three whistleblowers into one location at one time. So we all flew in. I flew everybody into Detroit. We sat down, we filmed that documentary. And then I came back to start editing it. And I was just going to edit Invaded. And I knew the child trafficking had to make up a portion of it. So I'm like, I'm going to go back through and re-edit these five interviews. And I'm just going to trim out the fat. I'm going to trim out the absolute best parts that I want to put into a documentary. And I took 10 and a half hours or 12 hours and I got it down to 2.5. And I was like, shit, man, it's 2.5 hours. And like, I remember texting JJ and being like, listen, dude, we're not going to be able to fit this into this documentary. And he's like, man, do you think we could get one out by like September, you know, 13th or whatever, 15th? And I'm like, man, I'm like, there's just no way, JJ, man. Like, I just spent the last 7 days and I've just trimmed just what I needed for the child trafficking part of this. And I go, man, I start telling him this story. I was like, dude, we got Christy with the children coming through Mexico. I said, we got the children Once they get handed over at the border, I said, we got you, we got Gil Mazza, we got Brandon. And then I said, after that, they get over handed over to Border Patrol, basically hands them over to HHS. And we got Deb, and Deb was processing these children in the HHS. And then from the HHS, they go to the intake facilities or the long-term care facilities, which is the NGOs. We got Carlos at the NGOs. Then Carlos is also the man that delivers the children to the buyer. And then we got Baz, who's the badass dude that goes and kicks in the door, man. I'm like, we're the only ones in America that have ever documented this whole process of these migrants coming through Mexico, what they're dealing with, and all the way till they actually end up at a buyer in America. And then we got the man that goes rescues them and can tell the story about what has happened to these children. And then I sat there and I thought for a second and I said, bro, I'm pretty sure I could put together a documentary on trafficking and we could get that out. I said, what if we just give it away for free? Did you know we don't give it away for free? And I'm like, no, not give it away for free. I mean, we're already doing pre-orders for Invaded. It's $9.99. What if we give them two documentaries for $9.99? We don't charge any extra. That gives us this runway to double promote this thing. Instead of just having one documentary, you promote it and you hope it's a bang. And if it's not, you got nothing left, right? It'll give us a double runway where we have two documentaries. And he's like, well, let me think about it. I was like, all right, let's do this. Let's make a list of the pros and cons, right? We'll put all the pros in one side and all the cons in one side and we'll see. Okay, so let me know what the cons are. We couldn't figure out one con that would come from that. So he's like, dude, just screw it, do it. I was like, all right, I'm gonna have to lock myself in the room. I had 25 days from literally, I just was sitting there with a bunch of raw content to that final documentary we did in 25 days. And I just sat there, locked myself in a room, wrote the script three times, re-recorded it three times. Went out, bought new cameras, new backdrops, new everything, because I knew it was going to be good. And I just didn't like the way that the optics look until then. I seen Brandon Straka one day put out a video on X with his black background, you know, everything's black behind you and you have to have enough room for the light to fall off. And I've always wanted to create that shot, but I've never been able to, or had the opportunity or really absolute need to. And then finally that came up. So I went and got all the stuff. I mean, I was literally hanging a sheet on my wall, like nailing a sheet. My brand new house, I just finished remodeling the entire inside. I'm over here nailing sheets to the wall again. I'm like, gosh, damn it. So I did that, recorded it, got that out. So that was Trafficked, right? That released in September. But there was no, it was good. People like you that saw it loved it. I mean, that was the most well-reviewed documentary that I've put out, I would say. But again, didn't move the needle. So then I said, okay, screw it. I had this. Just God wanted me to do this. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it, right? We're going to put out another documentary. We're going to rescue these children. We're going to make enough noise that these people can't ignore it anymore. And I was like, but Trafficked, like what else was wrong with Trafficked? Oh, well, part of it was dark, right? Like even Redacted's wife, Natalie, Clayton Morris's wife, if you guys watch Redacted, you guys know who Natalie is. She had to stop watching it halfway through because she just couldn't take it, right? She knows what's going on. She's well aware of this entire operation, but she was like, it was heavy, it was dark, right? So I said, okay, you know, maybe my goal of this is to get these children free. And I can't give anybody any excuse to not watch it. So I said, well, I'm just going to focus this next one on how obvious it was that our government knew that this was happening. And I'm going to show enough about the operation. And I said, this time I'm going to tell it. The idea in my head was to write this, how our government has created this public-private partnership where DHS has created a public-private partnership with the Mexican cartels, and then HHS under Xavier Becerra and ORR under Robin Marcos has created this public-private partnership with these NGOs. And together, between Alejandro Mayorkas, Xavier Becerra, Robin Dunn Marcos, and this list of about 290 at the very least NGOs that are all funded with our tax dollars have created this quasi-public-private partnership, which has turned America into the child kidnapping traffic capital of the world, the child kidnapping capital of the world. And they've done so because they've taken over the most two dangerous legs of the journey for a child trafficker. So when we talk about child trafficking, there's two really dangerous parts of this journey for the trafficker. The first most dangerous, second most dangerous is bringing the merchandise across the border. The first most dangerous is delivering that merchandise to a buyer in America, right? So because of this system that they've created, I'd ask your audience, right? Have you ever seen Mexican cartels literally just bringing their merchandise of cocaine and pounds of fentanyl and just tossing it over to a border wall, like a border patrol agent on the other side of the wall? No, nobody ever has, right? Because they're never going to just hand over billions or millions of dollars worth of merchandise that's just going to get destroyed or burned or captured, right? Now, I'm not saying that there's not times that the cartels have literally delivered drugs to border patrol agents and border patrol agents deliver those drugs into America. We know that that's happening, but I'm talking about like on camera right out in the open, or just like, hey, you're walking across the border at this entry point. Here, let me just give you this bag of fentanyl. Do you mind just carrying it across for me? Like, yeah, sure, I'll do that for you. No, but you see it happening with children. And all your audience has to do is just go on YouTube right now. Probably a lot of people are over here on YouTube watching, and just search cartel drops child over border wall, right? Mexican cartel hands child over border wall, drops child over border wall. However you have to search it, if YouTube hasn't scrubbed it, because they've been saying this a lot lately, they maybe have. But you would see, and you'll see it in my documentary, just video after video after video after video, three-year-old, five-year-old, three, seven, five-year-old. You know, it's just the amount of children that they're literally just on camera. And those are just the CCTVs that we've got access to that they've released, right? So if we have that many that we've seen, imagine how many are out there, thousands and thousands. Because the system that they've created has these children getting branded like cattle. And they'll have literally a phone number, a name, and an address, literally safety pinned to their shirt. Sometimes it's in a plastic baggie. Sometimes it's in a backpack. Sometimes it's literally just permanent marker. And it's just scribbled across their arm, a name, an address, and a phone number. And that is the buyer, in my personal opinion. But our government calls it the sponsor. And because of the system that Alejandro Mayorkas has created, when that Border Patrol agent receives that child, it is part of the policy that he processes that child. And processes that child means collecting his information, asking who his parents are, what country he came from, you know, where he's supposed to be going. And the kid that's been raped and assaulted, you know, 80% of them have been raped and assaulted that have came across that border. So pretty much every one of these children has been sexually abused. Every man or adult or man in a uniform has played a hand in trafficking them. They see this guy in a green uniform and he goes, who's that? And the kid's like, oh, that's my dad. That's my uncle. That's my grandma. Because the cartel member said that he's going to kill him. He's going to rape him, or he's going to kill his whole family if he says anything different. So the child has no choice. And then with the Border Patrol agent knowing all of this, as well, right, takes that information and puts it into the child's file as his sponsor. Then he calls for pickup, and an NGO arrives and picks up that child and takes him over to HHS. And then HHS goes through the process of interviewing that child again. And these are like really bizarre interviews. What kind of, hey, when's the last time you have sex? How many times have you had sex? Has guys ever came inside you? Have you ever been pregnant? Like, just they're asking this to four-year-old children. And the purpose of these questions is supposed to be to determine if the child's being trafficked or not, right? If they owe a debt to a cartel. Because, yeah, Wayfair, exactly, higher calling, you got it. You understand how this operation works. Very similar to that, right? So now this case coordinator's job is to vet this sponsor, right? So she interviews the kid. Kid goes back to his thing. Now she's got to contact this person. She calls it up, says, hey, Shane, you expecting a child? You're like, oh, yeah, I am. Oh, okay, what's his name? Like, Johnny. No, what's his date of birth? His date of birth, you know, 10-10-22. Oh, congratulations, Shane, you want a child. Oh, now you have to do is just fill out this FRA application. So you go onto their website, you get an FRA application, and it's basically like a crappy job resume that you fill out with some bogus information. Then you have to submit them a copy of your ID, and that copy of an ID is you're going to take your phone and you're going to get on WhatsApp, just like this fake ID that says I'm John Smith that I bought off a Venezuelan gangbanger in New York City. It took me 15 minutes to buy a brand new ID. I saw you
do that too, man. Wild.
Crazy, dude. It's like it took literally 15 minutes of being in Queens, and a dude approached us and was like, yo, you need an ID? And you watch my interview. I was still like caught off guard. I didn't even know what name to give him. I didn't know. I wasn't prepared. Like, I didn't think it was going to be that simple. So I was like, I didn't think it through. Right. So now the man that was just called by HHS over WhatsApp, his job is to take a photo with his cell phone. So throws a ID down and takes a photo and sends it to the person working at HHS. And then HHS goes, oh, okay, we got a New York ID, John Smith, 2020 issued 2022. Google New York IDs from 2022 hybrid. Okay. Yep. That looks legit, right? She's looking at a photo that was a screenshot on WhatsApp, and she's comparing it to whatever's on Google. And let me put this into context too, right? You ever been to a bar? I'm sure almost everybody in this audience has, if they're over 18 or even under 18, they've probably been to a bar. Every bar in the United States has an ID book. Every single bartender has this magical book. It's like this thick. It's like literally like an old phone book. Yep. And it's every ID basically over the last, however, 20 years, basically in every single state. So you want to see in Michigan, they've had 5 ID changes in the last 3 years, all of those IDs there, hybrids, non-hybrids, that are all there. And you get to go and you can easily compare and go, yeah, that's fake. HHS didn't even have that. Their employees are using Google to verify this. And then they take the address, right? So this one's 60, I don't even know if I want to say it on here because I don't know about doxing myself, but there's an address on here. And then they go and they get on Google and they type this address into Google Earth. And then they spin that little ball around on Google Earth and go, oh, that looks like a safe house for a kid. We'll approve it. Congratulations, Shane. You're getting Johnny 14 days later. 14 days after you just invaded America and you've just provided us with bogus ID. We know it's a bogus ID. And then we're going to basically expedite. We're going to, and if the case coordinator tries to question it, then after day 14, they bring in a strike team, which means they take that case from that case manager, they hand it to another case manager, they bring her in front of a panel, in front of like their entire staff, they humiliate her in front of everybody for not checking all those boxes. And they basically send her on her way until it tells her, tells her if it happens again or it continues, then she's going to be on the unemployment line. And then when they send employees onto the unemployment line, they wait till shift change when there's over 2,000 employees inside the facility. Then they come to your desk with security guards and they make you leave all of your belongings and they escort you with security out of the building like you're a gosh damn criminal. That's what happened to the good employees that spoke up too much. So long story short, after that, the child's basically delivered to this person. From there, the child might be transferred to one of these NGOs, such as Southwest Key Programs, depending how long it takes them to coordinate and verify and vet this sponsor, his quote unquote background checks to come back and everything. The kid might have to go to one of the Southwest Key facilities for a couple of weeks. Sometimes the child just doesn't have a number. Maybe the permanent marker got washed off his arm and he doesn't have any sponsored information inside of his file. So then he has to go into what would be Southwest Key Programs or MVM Inc. or one of these other long-term care facilities where they're actually holding these migrant children at. Then whenever they get that coordination done and they're like, okay, cool. They call up Southwest Keys. They're like, hey, we need to deliver Johnny to Shane. He's going to be at, Detroit Airport, let's say today's February, Wednesday, February 19th at about 4 a.m. Can you meet him there? And they get on their thing. Yep. Oh yeah, we can coordinate a flight there. No problem. Yep. Sponsor will be on, or the chef or the escort will deliver Johnny to Shane at 3 p.m. at Detroit Metro Airport. Meet him at baggage claim 5. And then you go to baggage claim 5 and then our government delivers you a child. And then when that delivery is taking place, here's the craziest part about this process, Shane. So the escort, which is the person, Carlos, right? He's the person that actually takes the kid from the facility where he's being monitored and then gets on a plane, then goes and gets a rental car and takes the rental car wherever he has to go, however he has to move this child around to be at baggage claim at 3 p.m. in Detroit. When he gets to the baggage claim, Carlos, the escort, has a manila folder. And inside the manila folder is the kid's information. And in that folder is the screenshot of the WhatsApp ID that the case coordinator printed off. So his job is to make sure that the ID that's being handed to him matches the ID in the folder, not matching the person that's giving him the ID, right? Which means Shane could have his wife there, or you could be like one of the people that hired some dude on Facebook to pick up his daughter from the airport. Yeah, we called. We got a list of these numbers, and they started calling around and seeing if the children were there. And one of the numbers they called, the guy goes, oh, yeah, is Johnny there? You go, Johnny? Who's Johnny? And he goes, oh, and it might have been Sally or whatever. Is Sally there? Sally who? Sally, you didn't pick a Sally up from an airport on blah, blah, blah. Oh, that girl. Yeah, I mean, I answered a Facebook ad. Somebody told me that they'd pay me to pick up their daughter from the airport. I picked her up and, he gave me his ID. I picked her up and that was it. I dropped her off. I haven't seen her since. So literally I could take this ID, right? I know, let's just use my business partner, JJ Carroll, for example, right? I could go to New York. I get a photo ID. I could get it I know where JJ State is, right? I easily could get online and figure out his address if I didn't have it. I get an ID from whatever state he's in and I could get an address with his. I get his name on this. And then I could literally, if the cartels, I tell them, I just need to know the child's name and his birthday, right? So the cartels, if I'm buying a child, they just tell me what name and birthday to say, right? How many kids that came over with new identities and they literally are just multiple kids in the system with the same names, right? So you just call up the facility and I could apply and say, I'm JJ Carroll. I send in this screenshot of this. Hey, okay, cool. Everything checks out. Yep. I get a kid and I just go to the airport and I pick up a kid with a fake ID. It's literally that simple. You get a kid in 14 days. I mean, and this is how, so your audience understands, right? Our government has taken possession of 452,121 migrant children as of October of 2024. So this didn't stop until literally January 20th. So however many more children disappeared in that 3 months, probably a lot, roughly 220 or 232 a day. But out of that 452,000, 350,000 as of December 14th, these are Tom Holman's numbers, 350,000, our government had delivered. That exact process I show explained to you just right there took place. And they do one wellness check. It's a 30-day wellness check after the child's been delivered. And they call that number up and they say, hey, Shane, how's Johnny doing? Shane answers, goes, Johnny's doing great. Oh, good. Good to hear, Shane. Thanks. That's it. So that's considered a found kid, right? When they don't answer, they cannot locate the child. That's considered a missing child. So 350,000 children our government has taken possession of, processed migratorily across our border, put into these facilities where actually you had asked me to share something in the live chat with you. We'll get into this here in a minute. This is going to be the lawsuit from that the DOJ has against Southwest Key Programs. We'll read off some of those in a minute. But this is what I'm talking about is 350,000 children can't be found. Our government took possession of these poor children that have literally been through absolute hell on earth. And they had an opportunity to save every one of them. Because at some point, this child arrived here because they were sold, kidnapped, or trafficked out of another country, or they don't have parents whatsoever because our government has went in, toppled their third world governments, and they've went into a civil war, and there's just dead people everywhere, and the kid had nowhere to go but to escape, and they've arrived at our border. So what you're looking at here is the DOJ lawsuit. This is our United States, our Department of Justice has a lawsuit against Southwest Key Programs, right? Southwest Key Programs is the number one child trafficker in America. And I believe it's on page, let me see here. I think it's page 12. No, it's actually, we're going to start on page 10. And where it says B on page 10. Yeah, there's one of the rooms that the kids were in. Sick.
Yep.
Okay, B at the bottom where it says reported accounts of sexual abuse and sexual harassment. So Southwest Key's own documents report, these are their internal documents, numerous examples of sexual abuse and harassment of children by employees. For example, one Southwest Key report describes a Southwest Key youth care worker who in 2022 reported repeatedly sexually abused a 5-year-old girl, an 8-year-old girl, and an 11-year-old girl at Casa Franklin in El Paso, Texas. The 8-year-old girl disclosed that the youth care worker would repeatedly enter their bedroom in the middle of the night and touch their private areas, and he threatened to kill their families if they disclosed the abuse. Another Southwest Key report describes a Southwest Key shift leader, a supervisory employee, who in 2019 repeatedly raped, abused, and threatened a teenage girl throughout her shelter stay at Casa Montezuma in Channel View, Texas. The child reported that he reported the abuse by passing a note to her teacher on a day that she knew that the shift leader was out of the country on vacation. Her note stated that the shift leader was having sex with her at the shelter and threatening her to remain silent, she wrote. She wrote it in Spanish. He can do whatever he wants to me because, well, he's the shift leader and he's the boss. She also reported that she believed that the Southwest Key employees were covering for the protected shift leader because, among other things, he would regularly switch assignments with other staff so that he could be alone with her. Staff also commented about the amount of time that the shift leader spent with the child. The child further reported that the shift leader had solicited nude photos of her and demanded videos of her touching herself. He made her perform oral sex on him, and he even threatened that if she reported the abuse, she would be hospitalized, right? And let me just zoom in on this so I can actually see what I'm reading here. Okay. And then all of this evidence was corroborated by video footage of the shift leader entering and leaving her bedroom, and she documented the abuse in her journal, right? In addition, employees observed the shift leader's failure to follow bedroom check policies and routinely entering the child's bedroom, as well as entering other children's bedrooms, right? So you think that this savage was just raping one child? Hell no. Hell no, he wasn't. There's no effing way. And do you think they interrogated every child? The FBI go in there and hunt this dude down and drag every child out and make sure that any child or any bedroom that child went in, that man entered, that child should be immediately separated and put into a special facility. So numerous Southwest Key reports detail a youth care worker who in 2020 absconded with a 15-year-old boy from Casa Cocopelli in Arizona. The Southwest Key youth care worker took the boy to a hotel room for several days where the youth care worker paid him for sex acts. And it goes on and on and on. That's page 11. Scroll all the way down. We're not even done at page 20. 21, 22. It ends at.
Jeez. You know,
that's our tax dollars, guys.
This is maddening. And I mean that, you know, I've never seen anything like this come out of the FBI, the NSA, any three-letter department that we, you know, we pay money, like literally billions of dollars a year for. TSA has never come out and said, hey, you know, we've done all of this in terms of, you know, busting people who are walking around with kids who aren't theirs. Like, what you've done with the small amount that you have had is absolutely priceless, man. And it just, America, I don't understand why we're still giving these guys money. Like, I don't understand how we are not in full blown revolution. I'm not advocating violence, for God's sakes. Like, I'm not. I am just dumbfounded at how comfortable we've gotten and kind of turned a blind eye to this kind of stuff. This has got to change. I mean, there's no kind of though.
Like, I'm sorry, but this is like, this isn't maddening. This is rage inducing because like part of the problem that Ryan, you had touched on earlier is that the reason this isn't taken off is that it's so dark. People just don't want to see it. They would rather bury their head in the sand and not accept that not only is this kind of evil capable of happening in reality, but our own people, our own neighbors, our own government, our own leadership that we have in roundabout ways selected to be our leaders are not only allowing it to happen, but they're making it happen better. Like, they're improving upon it. And I have a question for you, Ryan, because I have my own theories, but do you guys have any idea of what happens to these kids afterwards?
Afterwards, like, as in after they're delivered to that buyer?
After, say, for example, they've been bled like cattle until, like, because I'm assuming that there's a reason for why the age kind of cuts off at 17, right? Like, do we know what happens to them afterwards? Do they just kind of get released out into the public? Because, like, part of this question for me is that hearing about these numbers of nearly, what you said, 452,000 kids, mm-hmm. have gone missing, 190 of them are from one country. Like, that's a lot of kids that come to the U.S. and we're not seeing them running around in, like, you know, droves or packs or groups or whatever. Like, and you've provided evidence of them being packed like sardines into these dilapidated buildings and everything. But, like, where are they going? Because, like, I have a theory, and it has to do with a kind of like a topic that also people don't want to talk about, that the word ends in chrome. And I have a theory on that, but what have you guys found?
So we touch on that in Trafficked, right? And I think that was kind of part of the problem, right? Is it's too dark and people can't handle it and they don't want to hear it and they don't want to listen to it. So giving them any excuse to kind of put up their blinders and just go, I know it's happening, blah, 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 and they just shut off, right? And I think that's what also kind of, like I said, happened to limit the reach of traffic. That's why in Operation Amber Alert, I didn't even touch on it. I didn't even mention it because I didn't need to, right? My job is to get these children saved. And every time I start going down the adrenochrome and all these other rabbit holes, it's like it just shuts so many people off.
Yeah, you'll lose
people. Statistics are roughly about 6 to 8% are being used for some type of nefarious acts, whether that's organ harvesting, whether that's adrenochroming, whether that's actually, and I think it's 1% is actually satanic ritual sacrifice. And those are the really, like, sick. It's kind of hard. Is it more sick for the adrenochroming, more sick for the ones that you're just life's over with? I think it's both just the most absolutely disgusting and vile acts that you can imagine. I mean, you know, and I don't even know if those are the worst ones, you know, that some of these girls, you know, they rescued one girl. I think she was 7. She was chained in a basement and she was raped 7 to 10 times a day. And then every time that at the end of the night that the dude that basically owned her would come down, he'd throw her food on the floor in the basement and then he would rape her. And then after he was done raping her, he'd put out a cigarette butt. He would take a cigarette and he'd smoke a cigarette and he'd put out the cigarette butt on her arms. So that way, just in case she ever escaped, every time she looked down at her arms, she would see and be reminded of all of those scars of every time about how he savagely raped her, right? Like, these are the most vile and sick humans on the face of the earth. And there is no cure for these people, right? There is no cure for a pedophile. You cannot cure them. They cannot be redeemed. They will repeat offend 100% of the time. And they are the first ones we release from prison, right?
And they spread like a virus because when they act upon their prey, the likelihood is they create another one. and they don't act upon others.
100%, and they don't start off just vilely raping these children. They all start off with porn, right? And it's like, it's a really close-knit community. So it's like one person talks about it, and then he shares it with a friend, and then that person shares it with, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a really tight-knit circle of how they operate. I know that one time at my old work in Michigan, one of like the guys, he was like an engineer. He was in the same department I was. And next thing we know, like the sheriffs came in looking for this dude and they arrested him. And then come to find out, he got caught like selling kiddie porn to like an ATF agent or somebody like online or something crazy like that. And he just like this normal dude. And I just think to myself, like, it's like a cancer. It just spreads and it infiltrates and they get in these networks and they, and the crazy part is, right, so one of these Southwest Key programs facilities, and I bummed out it never makes it into the documentaries, but it's in Lemon Grove, California, and it's at the bottom of their state. It's by San Diego, and it's a Southwest Key programs facility that and it's a house, right? I remember when Carlos gave me this address, because I was just on a random trip, and I was like, hey, is there any these facilities here? I'm going to try to go by and check out to see what they look like down here in California, and there was one, and I remember I drove by it a couple times because it was a house. And I just kept driving. I'm like, where is this Walmart? Where is this giant building with these, you know, warehouses? And I'm like, it's not the U-Haul shop, is it? Like, I kept like thinking I was driving by it, and I was in the wrong area. And then finally I slowed down. I was like, this is it. Like, I got the GPS in walk mode now. And I'm like, looking, and I'm like, well, it's right here. And I go, oh, and then I seen the cameras in the house. And then I seen the fence with the security sign warning on it. And I go, holy shit, that's a house. And this one facility was where Carlos was telling me that they were the midnight flights that Biden was flying in. This was one of the specific areas where they would specifically have mixed boys and girls. They would charter a small private jet. They would land at a private runway. There's a private airstrip, which is contracted by our DOJ and the Department of Homeland Security by DHS. It's a private airstrip about 10 minutes from this house. And they're delivering, again, 13 to 17 year old boys and girls, specifically ones. Carlos said that these were like always like the cleanest and the healthiest and the best looking children that were specifically taken to this facility. And they were dropped off there. And he said that when they would land on the private runway, that they would already have vehicles, transportation sitting on the tarmac, basically ready, so that the kids literally went in the middle of the night, went right off a plane, right into this, you know, SUV. And they were, you know, three or four SUVs would take the 10 kids down to this house, and they would deliver these kids to this one house. And he's like, it was always weird the way that this is one place didn't sit with me right. And so I went there, and then I got on Zillow, and you find out that it's like this Chinese doctor that owns the facility, that owns the home, and he's leasing it out. Like, we called his office and like left the message one day. We're like, hey, we just want to let you know, if you know that your facility is being used to traffic migrant children, curious if you'd like to comment, man, we can come to your dental office and do an in-person interview. If you're interested, please let us know. And yeah, it's bizarre, some of these places. And you just like, you think about that facility and you go, okay, at the, you know, Coca-Cola facility or wherever in Channel View, Texas, probably holds 500 children, which means they probably have 50 to 100 staff members on facility, on site at all times. Like, it's kind of hard to just disappear with a child into a bedroom and get away with it. I mean, it's obviously happening, but it's a little bit more difficult when you have 500 eyeballs on a facility at all times. You don't know if a kid's going to walk in, you know, if a staff member is going to walk in, unless you got staff members that are looking out for you, right? Which there might have been multiple of them involved in those crazy thing. One plays lookout while the other goes into the bedroom with the kids. I don't know. But you take a look at this smaller facility and you go, okay, well, maybe there's 10 kids there, maybe 20 kids max. And then you have what, two supervisors on staff at all times, maybe three. And then what? One goes out and picks up lunch for everybody. One goes shopping. One goes to the grocery store. One calls in sick. And now you just got one person in the house with all the kids, you know? And then I think about that place too. Again, you got 13 to 17 year old boys and girls mixed in a house with minimal supervision. All you have to do is place cameras in the right places and kids are going to be kids. And you have this never ending live stream of kiddie porn that you can literally sell at your disposal or at your whim.
They're literally empowering pedophiles and then running cover with guns.
Okay, so check this out.
Federal agencies, like, it doesn't get any. It gets worse, but
yeah, it does, because I didn't finish the story. You reminded me. So you search this address and you go into the sex registry, right? The National Sex Offender Registry, where you can put in the address and see all the pedophiles that live around you. And it allows you to go into a 1 mile, a 3 mile, a 1 mile and a 2 mile and a 3 mile radius. Within a 1 mile radius, I think it's like 77 pedophiles live within a 1 mile radius of this. Registered sex offenders of this location. You go to 2 miles and it's like 177 or 300, something like that. You go to 3 miles and there are so many pedophiles and registered sex offenders that surround this facility that the own government database search maxes out. I don't know what it is. Is it 1,000? But whatever that number is, you literally cannot search this. And anybody that wants to fact check me, I can go and share this video again on my Twitter. So it's actually in my highlights on my X account. If you guys have the ability to pull up my X account right now and go over to my highlights, you can see this one. And I believe I put the address of this. Okay, yeah, there it is. It's so if you see the What is Treason documentary on how to buy, you got to scroll down a little bit. It's October 5th. It's down in August of 27th of 2023. It says California child trafficking ring. I know I'm not watching your screen, but I should pull it
up. All good.
Right there. That one. Go down. Right there. That's right, the one. Child trafficking ring. If your audience watches that video, I believe I put the address of this facility in there of where this house is located. And I'm almost positive I do. I don't know if it'll get you like in trouble for doxing it. So you might not want to play it all the way on your screen here. If that will get us in trouble. But I know I say the address. I put it right on screen in there. I do 100%. So anybody in your audience that wants to fact check me, you can go and see the address there. Then you can take that address and you can search pedophile rings or, you know, registered sex offenders within an X amount of radius of that. And you'll see what I'm saying. You won't be able to search and pull up the amount of pedophiles that live within a 3 mile radius of that place because the search will max out.
They're literally predators circling the watershed or the water hole.
Literally. Like you couldn't like geographically pick a worse place to put a child migrant facility with migrant children that have been raped and assaulted.
Well, the white pill that Torup's looking for is that when we decide to like actually act on these people, we have to do it with speed and precision. And they're effectively all gathered around these areas like freaking fish in a bucket. We just have to act. Like that's the hard part, right? We have to get all these resources accumulated that do not have these disgusting satanic individuals that are a part of it so they can spill the beans. And then we just move with speed and precision like the US military is capable.
We have geolocation data, right? Every single one of these scumbags, these aren't rocket scientists. One dude, when one of the caseworkers, the dude sent his photo in and his ID, like, you know, you look at an ID, like you're looking straight forward. It's got a solid background. This dude basically like had like a bong in his background. Not really, but it was like shades and like, it was, and he was looking down, like he just literally took his cell phone and there was like curtains and random stuff behind him and he took a photo of it. And then he went on a website and had a fake ID made and they gave him this ID. Well, he sent that ID to Deborah and Deborah runs it up the totem pole to the higher ups, right? And they basically tell her to pound sand. And then finally, after throwing a fit about it, right, where she ended up going to the embassy of that country, right, and trying to verify if this was like a Guatemalan ID. And they're like, no, that's a counterfeit ID. She gets reprimanded and then her supervisor tells her, well, go ask the guy for another ID. She goes, okay. So she calls up, you know, Shane. She goes, hey, Shane, you got another ID? She goes, we need a different ID. And he goes, what do you mean I need a different ID? I just paid $200 for that one. What's wrong with the one I just gave you? Like these people are so brazen and they are so confident that they are going to get a child delivered from our government. That they're literally telling the person, the supervisor, that'd be like me going to the bar and handing the bartender a fake ID. And when they tell me no, me being like, what's wrong with that ID? I just paid $200 for that. Give me my drink.
So these idiots sell drugs to people and then don't get paid. And then they call the cops to say, hey, yeah. I sold this guy like $300 for the fucking whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you idiots.
Yep.
Holy shit. All right. We need some optimism. And I think the best way to do that is, all right, first and foremost, let's talk about the impact that you've had. And we got to keep these somewhat short. We'll kind of wrap up here in about 10 minutes. And then how do we help? And I kind of want to understand too, because we've got a just a cadre full of door kickers, right? Like a lot of guys that probably wouldn't mind going in and doing the work that needs to be done and when that needs to be done. if we can help you guys through all those, and you can get help us offline. But in terms of, you know, if those are, you know, if those are guys you need, we can talk about that offline. But I do want to know, first and foremost, how do we help you? And like, is there a Bitcoin address? Because obviously being a Bitcoiner yourself and having this audience out here, like that's one of the things that we, I think, kind of bring to the table in this fight is we can help mobilize and move people. And I think this is one hell of a mission for veterans to be involved with.
So if you go to my Twitter, I believe at the top of my Twitter, there's like a little icon that has like, it's like, I think it says send a tip. Yeah, it does. It says send a tip, and there on X, they allow us to put our Bitcoin address, our Cash App, and our Venmo. I also have a PayPal, which is givesendgo.com/OperationAmberAlert. So just like my films, but Bitcoin is by far the best asset that you could donate to me. My entire team, all my employees, 100% of them work off Bitcoin. So yeah, it's right there. Yep. And then you just click on it, it'll copy the Bitcoin address. It's nice. On-chain Bitcoin. By the way, it wouldn't let me put two in there, so I just put the on-chain one because I figured most people obviously have on-chain. And if you got a blue wallet, Bitcoin transactions are only like 52 cents right now or something pretty cheap. So, but yeah, so my entire team works on Bitcoin. All my employees work for Bitcoin. All my editors work for Bitcoin. I'd say team, like I got a lot of people. I just got three editors and an assistant who helps schedule out some stuff for me.
Hey, so man, we're pretty still, low profile. That's still operation. A lot of signal. That's still a lot of signal that your whole organization is Bitcoin.
Yeah, 100%, man. I won't hire anybody if they work for anything less other than Bitcoin. I'm not going to pay my employees in a currency that they literally have to go spend at the end of the week because it's losing value. No, I pay my employees in the hardest asset known to man. And every one of my employees is exponentially in a better spot in life today because not, and it's not that I pay them a lot, right? Like I hire people in third world countries because I can't afford to pay full-time editors in America, but it's still 5 or 10 times more than they would get for their standard of living there. And, you know, we just keep making the world a better place, stacking sats and saving children. So that's the best way you can support me, man, is just, and if you can't, just share the content, go in the comments of my documentaries. Anytime one launches over on X, I always try to launch them on X for a week before I put them on any other platform, just so it drives that initial traction because it's all about views, really. You know, Operation Amber Alert, the first one I released got it's up to like 2.6 or 2.7 million now. The new one I just released is only at, I think we just broke 800,000 the other day. So in order to move the needle and make it so loud that it starts trending and even the mainstream media can't ignore it, you need about 10 million views. You really 5 million, I would say, is starting to get up there. 10 million makes it so loud and clear, and it has to happen in like a couple of weeks, right? If this got to 10 million over the next year and a half, like it wouldn't even move the needle, right? People would see it. People would understand it. But it needs to happen like right when they launch. So I'm putting out a new documentary roughly every 60 days. They cost about $25,000 a piece. Wow. I've put away, I took enough Bitcoin to do three and I got three of them. So that's the kind of like the deal I made with God is to go, okay, I'm gonna take $75,000 of my Bitcoin. I'm gonna put it towards the best cause I can think of, saving these children. And I got enough for three documentaries. And then I'm gonna put a donation link in them and just, you know, pray to God that people want to support this work. And so far the first one we broke over even on. We just broke even on it a little bit more than even when the second one launched. That one launched about a week ago. And I think we're still down about 8,000 total, which is, in my opinion, if I got out two more documentaries and I only lost 8,000, I'm getting to help these kids. I'm happy with that. That keeps me in the game for a long time. So, but little by little, like yesterday, we just got a $5,000 donation, which absolutely, you know, almost made me cry because I was like, damn, man, this thing got so censored on X that it just wasn't getting the views. And if you don't get the views, you don't get the donations. And it was going to be a big loss. And yeah, now we're only down about $7,200, right? And that's not including, so maybe you got some Bitcoin donations in there as well. So maybe we're closer to breaking even on these. And that's, I'm not trying to make money on these. I'm just trying to make more documentaries and put one out as fast as possible. So, and next is, you guys are like this in the Bitcoin show. I got one on El Salvador, which is kind of like a pet personal project of mine that, you know, it's called The Great El Salvadorian Comeback, and it's God, Bukele, and Bitcoin. And it's when these three forces converged, and literally it's like a story about David against Goliath, because El Salvador was the deadliest country in the world, just like America, and just like what we're seeing happen in Guatemala. They did it for 60 years in El Salvador and funneled $7.8 billion into that country and literally drove it into two civil wars and turned it into the deadliest country in Latin America. And then out of nowhere comes this man named Bukele, and with an envision and, you know, the backing of God. And he finds this weapon that's literally the lightsaber, if you will, that just is just destroys everybody. And it's just Bitcoin, God, and Bukele. And in 2.5 years, well, it took him about five total, but 2.5 is since he got control of his government. 2.5 years ago, I think it was 63 citizens were murdered in one day. Innocent citizens, just cartels just went out on a murdering spree, just killing innocent people to send a message to Bukele. That gave him the votes in Congress that he needed to basically suspend the Constitution, turn it into a police state, which was much needed. And then went and arrested every gangbanger that had tattoos on his face about how many people they've killed, right? And if you had those tattoos on your face, you went straight to prison, no court date, no hearing, you're going to prison for life. And that was it. They locked him up, put him away, and kicked USAID out of their country. And in 2.5 years, it went from the deadliest country in the world to the safest country in Latin America. I'm now buying property down there. I can't wait to go down there and be down there part-time. I'm going to try to move my my editing business down there because I can hire, you know, El Salvadorians are super hardworking people. I can teach them how to edit. I can increase their standard of living by 5x, and still it'll save me money on my editing process. So I'm working on building out an editing part of my business operation down there in El Salvador. It's the safest country in the world. I can't speak highly of it. And that documentary is going to blow people's mind when they see what this man has done and what Bitcoin has done for that country. So
they just recorded their first year without any murders.
Without any gang-related homicides.
That's wild. I mean, to go from the deadliest country on earth to not having a single gang-related homicide, like, that's incredible.
It's also, right? it's also a massive power push against the intelligence community and the CIA, because the CIA is what created all that chaos down in El Salvador, and they also created MS-13 and a lot of the other gangs and cartels.
We went, after they got out of a civil war, we went and rounded up every MS-13 gang member and literally forced El Salvador to take them back. And we literally went and dumped these savages, like the most violent, vicious savages from all, every, from Mexico, from America, from wherever we could collect them from. Like, oh, you're MS-13? Well, you're Salvadorian. Just dumped them in El Salvador. And then from like 89 to, I forget, it was like basically 2000, it just turned into like a powder keg waiting to explode because of our government and everything the United States has done. And even Bukele, when he first started getting control of the government, USAID tried to come in and go, oh, well, you know how we've always given money to the government? Well, we're not going to give money to the government anymore. We're going to decide what NGOs and organizations we want to give that money to. And Bukele said, you want to know what? It's not our money. That money doesn't belong to El Salvador. That belongs to the American taxpayer. Why don't you give it back to them? And they were like, oh, right? That's what Bukele did.
Oh, shit. Because he understands the game.
Oh, he's been the biggest. He was just tweeting out yesterday. He's like, oh, you guys are all now about... said something about most conservative journalists or independent journalists are fake news because they're bought and paid for. He's like, we've been putting this information out for years and nobody's reported on it. And I was like, I'm reporting on it. Just wait, give me a couple months. That documentary is coming and it's going to be awesome. So I can't wait to share that with everybody.
Absolutely awesome. Mike, you got any parting thoughts for us tonight?
No, I'm, I will say that like a number of the white pills I think are, kind of like what I was thinking earlier while Ryan was talking about all the darkness and everything is like, this is the first domino that has to fall. It's like, we have to get the light shined onto the where the cockroaches are breeding and creating all their problems and figure out where they collect and all that. And then we can take swift action to get rid of them. So like, it's painful information, guys, but like, this is probably the most important step other than actual execution is like getting the information out there. So like everybody that's watching on Twitter and on YouTube, you guys have a call to action of just like, you got to share this shit. Like you got to get this out there. Like, especially the people that are like, I don't want to hear it. It's like, you need to hear this. It's like, especially every American parent, like, parents have to understand the kinds of evil activity that's going on there, and as well as individuals that have state and government jobs. Like, you guys got to understand, like, there's no pass just because you have a government paycheck. Like, there are a lot of really terrible things happening.
Amen, Mike. You're right, man. That's the most important part, right? We have, think about this. We have all of their cell phones, all of that geolocation data, every single person that picked up an illegal immigrant child. Right? They were communicating with the device to another government employee that had a WhatsApp number. We have all their metadata. We know where they were. We know where they transmitted from. We know who that cell phone was in contact, if they were in contact in Mexico, which is just going to be a matter of time before our Navy SEALs and our government does what they do best. And we're going to pinpoint every single one of these scumbags. We're going to know how their networks operate. We're going to know it all because we have access to that information now. So it's just a matter of time. These guys are living on borrowed time. Now we just need the masses. We just need the American people to wake up and be willing to come out here like you guys are and talk about this and just cram this down their throat. I translated all my documentaries into Spanish now, at least the two Amber Alert ones that are out for free. You guys can take those, chop those up, share them, grab your favorite clips, blast them everywhere, put them on Facebook, TikTok, anywhere that you can spam this content and spam this information. Chop up all my documentaries however you see fit and put it everywhere, because that's where we're going to make the most change.
Man, I seldom lack the words to describe how humbled and honored I am to have you here, and to have you in this fight for the kids and using Bitcoin. I think this is one of those guys out there. If you're listening to this, you're hearing this, or watching this, this is one of those guys that's putting his money where his mouth is. He is taking action, and he is actually making a dent in the machine. And you see what it can. It doesn't take millions and billions of dollars to do it. It's one of those things where if you've got a heart and a passion and a soul and you want to go do something amazing, man, look no farther than Ryan Mata, guys. He has put together some of the best compilations of some of the biggest issues, not only here in America, but around the world. I mean, we're talking about the kids. If we can't keep kids safe, we can't, you know, stop trafficking them, especially here into the United States, where we've got this horrific problem of enabling pedophilia and pedophiles in general. Like, this has got to stop. I think you're right, Ryan. Like, I think, you know, when AI gets a hold of this, the right AI in the right hands, where we can start to track all this and trace it just like they are doing with the dollars, this is what's going to make pedophiles afraid again. And that day couldn't come soon enough. I'm honored and humbled to share some time with you. And this has just been one of the most eye-opening. I could do this for hours and hours. I've got so many more questions. And I'll hit you up offline, Ryan. But guys, go out there and, you know, help Ryan. Get him as much Bitcoin as possible. This is something that, you know, we should be diverting funds to and maybe making a donation to on a very regular schedule, just like DCA. I can't say much more than that, Ryan. Keep up the amazing work. If you guys, anybody out there has any connections to people like Candace Owens or Tucker or any of these other huge platforms where we can get these things out and get them out fast, that's, I think, one of the best ways to get as many views as possible. This needs to be one of those, you know, Ryan needs to be one of those guys that is featured on a show as soon as these documentaries come out. And boy, I'll tell you what, I think you're going to really move the needle, Ryan, and appreciate, you know, the set of brass balls that it takes to go and do something like this, because I know it does. And you're obviously up against some pretty savage people, and that's, I'll say that about, I'll stop there. But thank you again for spending time. We're not going to go through the sponsors tonight, but I would say real quick before we end the show, if you are interested in going to the first ever Bitcoin Veterans Conference, Bitcoin Alaska is happening in Juneau, Alaska, July 3rd through the 6th. You can get there early, stay late. It is going to be one hell of a conference. They've got great speakers coming up. It's in a beautiful place. Get your Airbnb and hotels and all that stuff figured out and get into town, man. This is going to be, again, July 3rd through the 6th. And I think it's going to be a lot of signal out there. The first Bitcoin Veterans Conference. And anything last minute before we check out of here?
No, man, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you guys, and I'll, you know, give me your time. Look forward to coming back on as soon as you guys get more time to have me back on. I'll come back on. Or I got another documentary that'll be coming out, Operation Amber Alert Regime Change, which is going to talk about how our government really goes in and overthrows these governments and rigs elections and stages coups to cover up their child trafficking operations. So that'll be coming out in about a month or so. I'll definitely come back on and kick with you guys.
You tell us exactly when you want to come on, and man, we'd be honored to have you back.
Appreciate you, gentlemen. You guys have a great night.
This is it for Bitcoin Veterans. We do this every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. We'll see you back here next week. Thanks, Mike. Peace.
Yeah, no problem, man.